This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, June 7th of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, we'll speak with a conservation photographer who has a new book out about the Colorado River. He'll be hosting an in-person event in Boulder this evening. Chris Moore has his weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You. And then herbalist Brigitte Mars shares her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC News update and commentary from Jim Hightower are at the bottom of the hour. Then we'll present the first in a series of audio documentaries produced by History Colorado. Today we explore the story of the only documented female buffalo soldier. Then at 9:30, Jeff Holland will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still coming up, but first, a look at the headlines with KGNU's Jack Armstrong.
Former State Senator Mike Johnston is Denver's new mayor, beating out opponent Kelly Broff with 54% of votes. Broff conceded at 10 p.m., with Johnston being nearly 10,000 votes ahead. For Council People's Elections, Flor Alvidres is the new councilperson for District 7 by default after opponent Nick Campion withdrew his candidacy in April. Vote tallies published at 1:30 a.m. show the District 8 race giving a very slim margin of victory to Chantel Lewis, with opponent Brad Rivar trailing by just 61 votes. Hopes for a left-leaning slate within City Council sustained a major blow, with incumbent Candy Sitabaka losing her runoff race to retain her District 9 seat. Finally, District 10 councilperson Chris Hines retained his incumbency, besting challenger Shannon Hoffman with 57% of votes. Colorado Springs has sworn in its newest mayor, Yemi Mabodale. In his swearing-in speech, Mayor Mabodale mentioned safer neighborhoods, efficient and fully staffed police force, and innovative homelessness solutions as his first main priorities. With Mabodale's big plans, the new mayor of Colorado Springs asked residents to join him in a quest for an inclusive, culturally rich, economically prosperous, and yes, safe and vibrant city on a hill.
We must come together as people if anything is going to be done. Dr. King said, we must all learn to live together as brothers, or we will perish together as fools.
Originally from Nigeria, Mabodale is Colorado Springs' first black mayor. He ran as an independent, making him also the city's first mayor not affiliated with the Republican Party. Outgoing Mayor John Suthers and Governor Jared Polis also gave speeches at the ceremony. And prior to the ceremony, Suthers offered himself as a resource to Mayor Mabodale. The family of a teen killed by Aurora police last Thursday met with police officials yesterday to review body cam footage. Kira Zizzo has more.
Legal representatives and relatives of a 14-year-old boy killed by Aurora police last week met with officials to review body cam footage of the fatal shooting Tuesday afternoon. This comes after relatives of Jordell Richardson gathered at Aurora's main police station Monday to demand access to the footage. They cited multiple word-of-mouth reports that Richardson, who is black and a recent middle school graduate, had been shot in the back while on the ground. Police claimed in a press release just after the shooting that Richardson was armed and part of a group of youths who had allegedly stolen vape canisters from a convenience store. Richardson's mother, Lori Littlejohn, told the Denver Post her son had never been in trouble with the police before. The family is currently running a crowdfunding campaign to pay for the funeral. For KGNU, I'm Kira Zizzo.
The Bureau of Land Management has put conservation on equal footing with oil and gas leasing within public lands. KGNU's Ryan Bigham has more.
The proposed rule would allow for private parties to engage in conservation leasing with the Bureau of Land Management, or BLM. These conservation leases would authorize the BLM to help restore the public land leased to it and mitigate the potential effects of future damages. The BLM says these leases will allow for conservation feedback from state and local governments, as well as other stakeholders. The federal agency is still seeking public feedback on the proposed rule, and comments can be made on the Bureau of Land Management's website until June 20th. For KGNU, I'm Ryan Bigham.
15 to 20 cattle attacked a jogger on Tuesday morning on Meadowlark Trail near Superior, according to the Daily Camera. A witness called 911 after seeing the jogger on the ground trying to protect herself. Boulder County and Open Space Rangers responded within 15 minutes. Rangers say the cows were likely trying to protect their calves, and trail users should be cautious this time of year because the cattle have their calves with them. The jogger was taken to the hospital, and her condition is unknown. Ironman Boulder 70.3 will be coming to the city this Saturday, June 10th. All residents will have access to their homes, but there will be delays through multiple streets around the city. Detours will be set by barricades. Residents are being asked to adhere to all restrictions on the following roads: Diagonal Highway, North 63rd Street, Marnock Road, J Road, US 36, North Foothills Highway, St. Vrain Road, North 75th Street, and North 73rd Street, as well as 71st Street. For today's weather, in Boulder, a high of 76 degrees today. Thunderstorms and showers likely before 4 p.m. and 5 p.m. Tonight, a low of 54 degrees, with showers and thunderstorms likely through the evening before 2 a.m. In Denver, a high of 78 degrees, with the 50% chance of a thunderstorm before 2. Tonight, a low of 54 degrees, with showers and thunderstorms likely before 2 a.m. For KGNU, I'm Jack Armstrong.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm Shannon Young. The Colorado River supplies water to over 40 million people in the U.S. West and in parts of Mexico. It sustains multiple ecosystems as well as major agriculture operations. Its levels have also fallen to worrisome lows due to a mega drought that began over 20 years ago. While much reporting focuses on the implications for humans who source water from the river, a new book out from Arvada-based conservation photographer David Showalter focuses on the river itself and the life it sustains. He joins me now live in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming down. Your book is called Living River, The Promise of the Mighty Colorado. Start off with the backstory. What led you down the path of this project, and tell why tell the story through photos?
So in 2015, I was not looking for a new project. I had just published a book, another book about the sagebrush ecosystem. I went to an Audubon meeting in DC and was invited to a breakout session. And I thought from looking at their incredible campaign that I could contribute something. And then shortly after that, I heard an expert who should have known better say that the river is dying, and that just flipped me on my head. That was not my experience. My wife, Marla, and I had been roaming this watershed, backpacking and such, backcountry expeditions for decades, and had seen a whole lot of life wherever rivers and water flow. And so I wanted to draw upon that and take people to the river.
Now, you also mentioned in your book that journalists tend to also use that framing, right? That the river is dying. And you, of course, mentioned that you take issue with that. But what other ways of reporting about the Colorado River do you feel are inaccurate?
Well, I just felt like a lot of these stories look at a river system that's 1,450 miles long through the lens of what I call the plumbing system, which is the dams and reservoirs that feed the lower basin states, California, Arizona, and Nevada, and also the big agricultural industrial operations in Yuma, Imperial Valley, and Mexicali, Mexico. And that's one way to look at the river. But it's all of that water that starts in Rocky Mountain National Park and is in the upper basin has to reach the lower basin states. And rivers have to flow to get there. And when rivers flow, there's life. There's abundant, dynamic life. And I don't think anybody's going to care if we don't take them to the river. If we just, you know, talk about, bemoan the status of the plumbing system, We need to know the river itself, and we need a lot more folks to care. And I felt like that was what I could contribute.
And it's hard to really properly convey the visuals over the radio, but this book is really just a stunning type, one of those books that is often out on coffee tables. You can just stare at the detail and some of the like, for example, the rock formations, the little plants over here and there. What are some of your absolute favorite parts along the river that maybe you already knew of beforehand? And did you get to meet any new ecosystems that you didn't already know about previously?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, for me, my understanding of the river started with the headwaters. And just right here in Colorado, which is about where 90% of the water comes from, is in the headwater mountains. And so all that wonderful snowpack that's melting right now, and it's really important to know where our rivers start. And like sitting here in Boulder, that about half of our water, we're in the Platte Basin watershed here, about half of our water comes from, in the Denver-Boulder area, the Colorado River by diversion. It's important to know those things. I think if we're to change our relationship to water, change the narrative, we have to embrace, I guess, the river we have and know where our water comes from. So that's a big part of it. And sorry, I didn't remember the rest of the question.
Any new areas?
Oh, geez.
Like, wow,
yeah.
This is
so
new.
So what I wanted to do was show people, I wanted to not only take them to the river, but show them what a watershed is, and a watershed of 40 million people, and what's our place in that watershed. And so I poked around in tributary spaces, and I went back to those places over and over again. The indigenous folks in Bears Ears were incredibly welcoming and generous, and these are people that don't have access to clean water, and we won't be whole as a watershed community until they do. The Gila River in southwest New Mexico, I was just there, and it is exploding with life. All of the birds that are coming up from the Central and South America to nest and raise their young there. The San Pedro River, which has to be infiltrated with water into gray water, into the alluvial aquifer to raise the groundwater and the water table, and that place is exploding with life right now. It's just this little river right now. It explodes when monsoon season comes, but these rivers are so important. When you think about southwestern rivers with their north-south orientation and how birds move through the landscape, and I often think of it as a river of birds. But this is a river that is dynamic and has abundant life wherever water flows, and I think that's a good starting point, you know, to understand and to begin to shift our relationship to water in the West. We can't continue doing things the way we have. There's less water in the system, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. We just have to shift our relationships.
Let's get into that shifting of relationships. Now, you mentioned about people from indigenous communities along the river who have a different relationship to the water as river keepers. And we also talk about the our groundwork of relating to the river, and a lot of that is based off of the 1922 Colorado River Compact. And it's important to note that indigenous communities were explicitly excluded from this Colorado River Compact. So I'm wondering if you could share a bit about what you learned from these communities along the way, the relationship to water, and if there's any particular stories about river keepers that you'd like to share with listeners.
Sure. So I worked with a wonderful family and some other folks in the Monument Valley area. And it started with Utah Dene Bekea, which is the Five Tribe Coalition for the Protection of Bears Ears. And that is Navajo, Ute Mountain Ute, Zuni, and Hopi people. They all came together, and it's really beautiful. And I just learned that the river is female, and she is sacred, and she is indigenous, and that these folks, although they have a water right, it's very complicated legally, and we just have a responsibility as a watershed community to make sure everybody has access to clean water. And so Cynthia Wilson was my guide in Navajo land, and she's just this incredible person. And yeah, that as river keepers, they shift our understanding of water in that part of the West, in the arid West. And I tried to tell the story through people who are doing great work. So Kirk Clankey up in the headwaters is, you know, he's protecting the Fraser River, which has a big diversion that takes the water out of the Fraser. And that's the first tributary of the Colorado up by Winter Park ski area. And folks on, as I mentioned, the Gila and the San Pedro and elsewhere in the watershed have a story to tell. And people that have dedicated decades to protecting their part of the Colorado River. And I think we can draw inspiration from those folks who are just regular people who decided they could make a difference. And even each of us can make a difference in our own lives.
We only have about a minute left. So I wanted to ask you, you are presenting your book this evening here in Boulder at the Boulder Bookstore at 6:30. Is there anything that you want people to know about this event?
Well, let's just gather as a watershed community and have fun. And I'm happy to take you to the river. And so I'll present for about a half hour. We'll sign books, answer questions, and have a wonderful community event.
That gives me one more minute to ask you another question that I just had to ask. You describe yourself as a conservation photographer, and I guess I'm more used to the vernacular maybe of nature photographer. Is there a difference? And if there is, what is it?
The difference is conservation photographers tell stories so people will care. So everything we do is with intention, and I like to think of it as the story decides what pictures and what words need to be written, and to serve the story and to bring people, in this case, along on a big river journey.
Well, thank you very much, David Showalter. He is a conservation photographer based in Arvada. We'll be presenting his book, Living River, The Promise of the Mighty Colorado, tonight at the Boulder Bookstore at 6:30. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
We go now to Chris Moore's weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas on how you can have your voice heard before Congress. It is pretty much a certainty that even if Congress were fully functional, it would not be able to pass all the laws necessary to protect us from the worst excesses of AI. But Senate Bill 1596, Real Political Advertisements Act, sponsored by Amy Klobuchar, is one step in that direction. A similar bill was submitted to the House by Congresswoman Yvette D. Clark, H.R. 3044, the Real Political Ads Act. They are submitted as, quote, a bill to amend the Federal Elections Campaign Act of 1971 to provide further transparency and accountability for use of content that is generated by artificial intelligence in political advertisements by requiring such advertisements to include a statement within the contents of the advertisements if generative AI was used to generate any image or video footage in the advertisements and for other purposes, close quote. AI-generated political disinformation has already gone viral online ahead of the 2024 election, from a doctored video of Biden appearing to give a speech attacking transgender people to AI-generated images of children supposedly learning Satanism in libraries. AI images appearing to show Trump's mugshot also fooled some social media users, even though the former president didn't take one during his recent arraignment. Generative AI can not only rapidly produce targeted campaign emails, texts, or videos, it could also be used to mislead voters, impersonate candidates, and undermine elections on a scale and a speed we have not seen so far. Quote, we are not prepared for this, warned A.J. Nash. He's the vice president of intelligence at cybersecurity Zero Fox. Quote, to me, the big leap forward is the audio and video capabilities that have emerged. When you can do that on a large scale and distribute it on social platforms, well, it's going to have a major impact, close quote. AI can now easily create automated robocall messages in a candidate's voice, instructing voters to cast ballots on the wrong date, audio recordings of a candidate supposedly confessing to a crime or expressing racist views, video footage showing someone giving a speech or interview that they never gave at all. Fake images can be designed to make it look just like a candidate dropped out of the race. Trump has not hesitated to lie with AI technology, posting a manipulated video of Anderson Cooper on his Truth Social platform, which distorted Cooper's reaction to the CNN town hall with Trump, created using an AI voice cloning tool. Legislation that would require candidates to label campaign advertisements created with AI have been introduced in the House and Senate, requiring anyone creating synthetic images to add a watermark indicating the fact. If you have thoughts on Senate Bill 1596 or House Bill 3044, the Real Political Ads Act, you can contact your senators and representative. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
It's now time to check in with herbalist Brigitte Mars, who brings us her weekly episode of Naturally.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars, and I want to talk about edible flowers. You know, flowers are the sex organs of plants. They contain pollen, which is the sperm of the flowers. They're so beautiful and sexy, they are designed to attract pollinators. And of course, planting flowers is a wonderful thing, not only for you, but for the bees, the neighbors that walk by. But if you're going to plant flowers, why not plant something that's edible? So here are some of my favorites. Do you know that apple blossoms are edible? They also increase fertility, so watch out. I did say they were the sex organs of plants. Something called Korean mint or anise hyssop, Agastache faniculum. They taste like root beer. Oh my goodness. I even like to use the leaves and put them in cookies. Bachelor's buttons are edible. Now, before I tell you any more flowers, I need to remind you that buying flowers from the florist shop, which are often grown in another continent with pesticides that are sometimes banned in the U.S. and shipped here, is not that eco. So we want to support the organic flower companies that are at the farmer's market and places like that, and of course, grow our own. But we don't want to eat things that are sprayed and they're not going to have a label on them. All of your mint family members, basil and oregano and thyme, have edible flowers. One of my favorites is daylily. And daylily, those bright orange flowers, you know, they only bloom for a day, so you might as well eat them. Not only can you eat the flowers, but you can eat the buds. And in Asian medicine, they're considered a great tonic for the lungs. And if you have too many daylilies, you know you can dig them up and separate them, and the little tubers are like little potatoes. You can cook them and eat them. Oh my goodness. It's like three treats in one: flowers, buds, and roots. Calendula is another edible one, and of course it makes a wonderful salve. You've probably seen calendula in baby care products, like Walita uses them for, you know, baby skin cream and diaper rash cream, because calendula is so great for our skin. And one of my teachers says calendula is good for ailments where the sun don't shine. What? Where the sun don't shine? You know, like your private parts and inside your mouth and toenail fungus. Yes. Carnation is another edible flower. Dandelion, dill, fennel, garlic, all of the alliums. Well, I don't want to say all of the alliums, but leeks, chives, scallions, onion flowers are edible, but there are some poisonous members of the lily family. Death camas, which does grow here in Colorado. Hollyhocks are edible and so colorful. Many people consider hollyhocks to be one of the great old-fashioned flowers. They come back year after year. There's another close relative of hollyhock called Rose of Sharon, also edible. Lemon balm, lilac. I love to put lilac blossoms in my water carafe, and after an hour, the water is perfumed with lilacs. Drinking something so beautiful makes you feel and look beautiful, I believe. Peony. It's said that those who drink the peony and eat the peony become as beautiful as the peony flowers. So why not imbibe beauty? Grow it, imbibe it, eat it, share it with your friends. Let's make this world a more beautiful place. Yes, that's what we are about here at KGNU. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
Thank you for joining us on today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host and producer, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Jack Armstrong, Ryan Bigham, Kira Zizzo, Poor Jaijung Kit, Jacob Agatston, Alexis Kenyon, Chris Moore, and Brigitte Mars for their contributions to today's program. Also, thank you to photographer David Showalter, who came into the studio from Arvada. He'll be presenting tonight at the Boulder Bookstore at 6:30. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, you can give us a call at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesdays during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for a special collaboration with History Colorado. We'll be playing episodes of Season 4 of their Lost Highways series. Histories from Colorado that you may not be aware of. That's going to be coming up after the BBC News headlines, which will be followed by Jim Hightower. But first, we're going to go to a couple of announcements.